Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRTLP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. You can find us online anytime at kdrt.org/Davisville. I'm Bill Buchanan. I'm your host. Thank you for tuning in today. Well, if Davis is a Bay Area town, at least partly, and I think you can make a case that it is, well, then the Capital Corridor is part of the link that strengthens that connection. This regional service presently runs 24 passenger trains a day between the Sacramento area and the Bay Area, and Davis is one of the busiest stops on the route. About 172,000 passengers used the Davis station in 2022. But before the pandemic hit in 2020, the number was much higher. It was about 380,000 for Davis in 2019. But the service is recovering and evolving, which is maybe the more interesting part of the story to me. Long term, the trains will knit Davis even closer to the Bay Area if plans to electrify the route come true. And even if you never step onto one of its trains or meet a friend at the platform, the health of the service and the ways the people use it can offer some insights into life in our area. So our guest today is Rob Padgett. He's the managing director of the Capital Corridor. This is his second time on Davisville. He first appeared on this show in spring 2022. Rob, thanks for talking with us again today.
Great. It's great to be here with you again, and thanks for the opportunity.
You bet. And I should say, we're doing this like we usually do these days by Zoom. So, you know, there's just a lot of news in this area. There's big changes to the Davis train station in the works, and that'll involve more than just the train station. You've got a new way you're trying out to pay for fares that would basically cut out the traditional ticket. There's this idea of faster trains. But let's start first with where things are today. So I was looking at your statistics on your website, and overall, the corridor had more than 900,000 riders in 2023. So that's up 27% from 2022. It's still about half of what it was in 2019 before the pandemic hit. Is this just sort of a slow return, or has something changed permanently since 2019?
Yeah, that's a great question. And as you might guess, that is probably the first question I get from anybody who wants to check in and see how things are going on Capital Corridor. You're right, our ridership has been growing quickly in the last few years. We obviously, like so many transportation services, saw a huge drop during the first year of the pandemic, and we have been slowly but steadily growing, and I would actually even say quickly growing from that low point. And you're right on those numbers. I will tell you that we are excited to celebrate. We're going to have an event at Sassoon Station on May 1st to celebrate our millionth passenger within the last 12 months. So when we look back over the last year, we're now at a point, because that growth has continued even into our current fiscal year, we're now at a point where we're getting close to a million a year. So your question is this a permanent change? And I'm going to answer that in a couple of ways. In terms of the demand for service, my belief is that we have a really untapped market. I think we could carry many, many more passengers than we carry today. And we are constrained at this point by a couple of things. One is we're not back to full service. So our full service is actually 15 round trips on weekdays and 11 on weekends. We have returned to full service on weekends relatively recently. And on weekdays, we're back to 12 out of the 15 round trips. We are constrained by equipment. So during the early days of COVID, we made a decision in California to give up some Amtrak leased equipment. It was close to the end of its life, and we knew that we were going to retire that equipment. And so we made a decision to do that early in the days of the pandemic. It was a really wise financial decision. It helped us keep our finances in good shape. But what it means now is I'm not running as many cars on the service as I'd like to. We've got some trains that are only at 4-car lengths that probably should be 5, maybe even 6. And we're not quite back to full service. So we're a little bit constrained there in terms of growing our ridership. And then going to your question of have things changed permanently? I would say they have, and in a couple of ways. One is just the patterns of travel. We see a lot more people traveling in the middle of the day, and our peak ridership during the morning and the evenings, it doesn't peak with as much of a slope as we saw in the past. We really squeeze tons of people on those trains in the early morning. And really, they're riding throughout the day now. So I'd say in some ways, it's a little bit easier to manage those peaks than we previously saw. The second big change is we don't have the 5-day-a-week long-distance commuters. We had many people, even before it became popular in Northern California, we had many people who maybe went in the office 2 or 3 days a week. So that was already a common type of travel pattern on our service. But we still would see people ride our service 5 days a week. That just isn't a huge part of our market. And in fact, our monthly riders, people who use our monthly tickets, which are deeply discounted, that's down to about 10% of our riders now. And that's quite a bit lower than it was pre-pandemic. Our single purchase tickets, so people who are just riding the one, they're not doing the 10 ride, they're not doing the monthly, that's up to about 65% of our ridership now. And that was previously only about 50% of our riders. So I do think we're seeing probably more people taking our service, but maybe fewer times in any given week.
You know, one thing that suggests to me that shift in the pattern is, you know, a commute service lives or dies by whether people are commuting. But if the people using the trains now are spreading out during the day, that suggests that maybe what you're doing is getting integrated into more life's activities. You know, less just, okay, I live in Davis and I work in Oakland and I'm going to commute it and go back and forth, and more that people are using it different ways. And I'm struck that you're expecting to grow, because then that might imply that the growth is going to occur in these other life activities. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And I'll give you a few numbers to back up a little bit about what you're saying. We used to carry about 70% of our trips were related to work. Now, that might be commuting, but it might also be, you know, you're going to a conference. It's something that's related to your job. And right now we're at about 40%. And what we're seeing is that the rest of those riders are, maybe they're students. A lot of UC Davis students ride our service, saves the parents a trip up to Davis to drop them off. They might be visiting family. They might be going up to Old Sacramento. They might be going down to San Francisco for a parade on a Saturday night or something. And so those leisure travelers are a higher share of what we see today. I will tell you, when I look ahead, though, I actually think all of the markets are growing. We are still seeing a growth, a steady growth in our business-related travel. A lot of the big conferences in the Bay Area and in Sacramento have just started to come back in the past year. The lobby trips that are so popular in Sacramento, which drive a lot of our ridership, those became more commonplace in this past year. So the work-related travel is growing, but we are still seeing a growth in the leisure travel. And I think you're well aware, a lot of people moved out of the Bay Area up to Davis and Sacramento during the pandemic. Well, they may still have family back in the Bay Area that they want to go visit. We would love to accommodate those travelers and keep them off the crowded roadways. The key is we need to help people discover our service, which is part of why I'm excited to be here today.
Do you have more cars coming? Do you have relief, in other words, for short trains?
We do. I have good news on that front. So there is new equipment coming to the state of California, manufactured by Siemens. They're called Venture cars. Those are single-level cars. These are not going to run on Capital Corridor service. We actually need to have the two-level cars just because we have busier trains. Those cars are going to run out in the San Joaquin Valley, connecting into Martinez and Oakland. And that will allow the San Joaquin service to shift some of those bi-level cars to the Capital Corridor service. So two of those Venture car sets are already in service in the San Joaquin Valley. The second one just, I think, a month or two ago went into service. And a third set is close behind. As that third set comes into service in the next couple of months, the San Joaquins will be able to start shifting some of those bi-level cars to ourselves and also to our sister agency in Southern California. So over the coming 6 months or so, we're going to see a lot more bi-level equipment available to Capital Corridor.
I do want to bring up reliability as well, schedule reliability. I know your mark is to hit 90% on the corridor, and you've done that some recent years. You did that in 2021, and you almost did in 2019. The last couple of years, it's been more like closer to 80%. You know, in other words, one train in five has been late. I'm wondering what's causing that, how you're addressing it.
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's unfortunate, and it is easy to talk about the cause because it's so concentrated. Unfortunately, in the last couple of years, we've had a really, really serious challenge with trespasser fatalities on the corridor, unfortunately, as tragic as those are. We've also had a number of incidents with vehicles on the track. That's been a real challenge, particularly down in Oakland. I'm not sure why, but that seems to be a popular place to abandon a vehicle. Often we're able to stop the train before we strike the vehicle, but what is required when a vehicle is abandoned on the tracks is we have to get it towed, and then a track inspector is required to come out and confirm that there was no damage done to the tracks. The number one goal we have is safety of our customers, of our employees, of citizens in California. And so we do take those precautions seriously. We actually work very, very well with local officials. We have quick responses when things happen. But unfortunately, the number of incidents has increased. And about 10% of our deficiency, so if you think, say, we're at, I think we've been at 82, 84%. Were we to get rid of those third-party incidents, we would be at 92, 94%. Almost all of those incidents are these third-party related incidents that are largely beyond our control. We are actively working on solutions to that in a couple of ways, if you don't mind.
No, in fact, I'm struck by the fact that abandoned cars could be such a frequent or growing phenomenon that it's really affecting your service, because you guys run a lot of trains. And, you know, if one in 20 is made late, I don't know that that number's right, but I mean, if 5% are made late because someone's left a car along the track, that's pretty striking.
Yeah. And in fact, sometimes, unfortunately, sometimes we will in a week have 4, 5, 6 incidents. So the numbers are really stunning. I know that there's some efforts underway to address that in particular in the city of Oakland. A lot of those happen in Oakland, but we do also have that happen in some other locations as well. I think people who ride our service are quite familiar with the Jack London Square area where our tracks run down the middle of the street. We've always had trouble there because that's just a complicated area of operation. The city of Oakland has received funding to actively address some of those issues, and we have been partnering with Oakland and participating in all those details to make that stretch safer. More typically in that location, somebody's listening to Google Maps, they hear it say turn right, and they turn right a little too quickly, and then they get stuck on the tracks. Some of the other incidents that we have are related to sometimes, unfortunately, stolen vehicles that are abandoned. And I know the city is also working on some actions related to that. But the other thing that we've been working hard on in our corridor, and we're not done with it yet, is we have a right-of-way program that we started a few years ago that is funded, and my board approved funds to do this. And that right-of-way program focuses on a couple of things. One is it clears out vegetation, so it makes sure the vegetation along the right-of-way is clear. It puts fencing up in locations where we have challenges with people cutting across the tracks. And it also helps us deal with encampments along the right-of-way. And we really want to people to be in safe locations. And I know sometimes the right-of-way may feel like a safe location, but it truly is not a safe location. And so part of this is just getting out there, talking to individuals who may have made a decision to be there and help them understand the risks. We also have partnered with Union Pacific to fund a couple of patrol positions where we have some officers who work in the corridor and try to identify some of these hot spots. And I will tell you, we are applying for, we're actively working on a grant submission to increase the funding available to do more fencing along the corridor. That is an effective tool. We are looking at some ways to address holes that are cut in the fence quickly, because sometimes they're popular shortcuts across our tracks. These are simply not safe. And I tell your listeners, if you see something, it's really easy to report stuff on our website. Just pop us a note, and we absolutely appreciate all the eyes on the street that we can have.
Okay, do a quick station ID. I am Bill Buchanan, and this is Davisville on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California, kdrt.org/Davisville. My guest is Rob Padgett. He's the managing director of the Capital Corridor, and we're talking about, well, basically getting an update on the corridor. So, Rob, I'd like to talk about some of the projects that the corridor has in the works, and particularly interested in the Davis train station. This is something that will affect more than the train station. The gist of the project, as I understand it, is to rebuild the platform in Davis. Access to it would then, people would get to it either through an underpass under the tracks or possibly an overpass. And the connection would also connect through to Olive Drive. So in other words, people could get from that side of the tracks to downtown, back and forth, without having to cross the tracks. It's to increase safety. In other words, fewer people crossing the tracks. It's to help with disability access. It's supposed to help with the speed of the trains as well. What's the status of this project?
It's actually one of the great things that we are going to see result from the infrastructure package that was passed at the federal government by Congress a few years ago. One of the things that that bill funded is it funded ADA improvements at all of Amtrak stations that were still not ADA compliant, and that is the Americans with Disabilities Act. Davis Station has a really challenging setup. It has a really narrow platform between the tracks. It is harder to support those individuals with disabilities. And so the only way you can fix this station is essentially a full rebuild of the station to make it ADA compliant. And what that will require is that we establish a center island platform approach to the station, very much like Fairfield-Vacaville Station, very much like that setup where you have a center island platform, you stand in the middle, wait for the train, and you can get on the train when it pulls into the station. It's really a wonderful setup. It's the safest approach to boarding. The other great benefit of this project, as you described, is it will provide that connection to the Olive Drive neighborhood, which is has been long been a desire of the city of Davis. This project will provide an undercrossing. So those who are coming into the, if you think of the parking facility there at the Davis station, there will be an undercrossing that goes under the tracks, and then you'll come up in the middle of the tracks to get on at the platform. But if you're just interested in cutting across there, you can take that all the way over to the Olive Drive neighborhood. It'll be fully accessible, easy for bicyclists to access the station. We certainly believe that this is going to both provide important community connections. It's going to vastly improve the safety of that station. I think you're going to see improved time at the station. Under the current setup, only a single train is permitted to be in that station at a time. So if you have a train that's headed in the westbound direction and the eastbound direction at the same time, one of those trains actually stops short of the station, waits for the other train to board all the customers, and then continues. And that's called a holdout rule. That holdout rule goes away. We could actually have trains on both sides of the platform at the same time. And that will shave some time off of boardings at that station.
Now, there was talk of maybe it would be an overpass, but have you decided on an underpass?
So Amtrak is the lead on the project, and they are running that project in coordination with the Capital Corridor team and with Union Pacific. As folks are probably aware, Union Pacific Railroad owns the right-of-way, so anything that we do must be approved by Union Pacific. We're going through that process. There is still the possibility that it would be an overpass. I think our hope is that it will be an underpass. We've looked at the details of that, and we think for bikers and community members, that's going to be a little bit of a better solution. But we do need to work through that with all the partners at Amtrak and Union Pacific Railroad. And then you asked me about timing. So the project's already started. Some may have noticed that there was some work done on 2nd Street near L. There was a reconstruction of that street. That was actually done as a first step in a signal replacement project that has to happen first. The signal replacement project will allow us to move the tracks a little bit. Moving the tracks a little bit will allow us to build the station. So the project's underway. The signals will be replaced in, we think, 2025. And we do expect the full station rebuild to happen by 2029.
By signals, you're talking about railroad signals, not road signals, but railroad
signals.
That's
correct.
Now, are you actually changing the station at all, or is this basically all in the platform and the underpass?
So the building itself at that station will remain. So that is an historic structure, and that will continue to be there. The parking facility will continue to be there. There may be some modifications to the parking facility, but largely that section will remain the same. The tracks themselves will shift a little bit to provide enough width between the tracks for the center island platform. That's where you're going to see most of the change.
I'm not sure where you're going to find room in there. Well, you get along 2nd Street, you've got more room to work with, but between the station and Slater's Court, that corridor is fairly tight. So it sounds like there's going to be some adjustments there, some changes.
Yeah, you'll see some shift in the platforms, but remember too that the boarding will all be in the middle. So where you have a platform there on the side where you get on today, that can be much narrower because you will no longer board at that location.
I want to talk a little bit about the tap to pay. It's a detail, but it's part of that overall evolution towards digital payments. This is a pilot program you've got right now where basically someone, if they're in the program, They step on board, they use their card, or I suppose a phone if they've got the app, tap on a device. They don't buy a ticket, in other words. They just tap in, and then when they leave, they tap out again, and the app calculates the fare. So you don't need to get a ticket in advance. Now, you tried this as a pilot program, right? What are you learning from that?
Yeah, and it's actually called the Tap to Ride program, and I'm impressed with your knowledge of the program because we're quietly testing it.
It's on your website, so.
Yeah.
And apparently I got the name wrong. Tap to Ride, you say. Okay.
Tap to Ride, yep. So we have a pilot running now, and we've signed up about 300 people for the pilot, and we did cap that. So I know there's some people who are on the waiting list to participate in that program, and we did that because we wanted to test this out. This is the first time in the U.S. that a program like this has been established on a railroad. The readers that read your credit card are being used in some other places in the state of California that are bus services, but this is the first time it's on a railroad. As you might guess, this is a pretty complicated setup where the reader needs to know which station is the person getting on at, which station is the person getting off at. There's all sorts of back-end stuff that's a part of this operation. But in short, it makes it easier to travel. If you take the train today, you either need to go to a ticket kiosk and buy your ticket or a station agent buy your ticket, or you have to go online and enter all your information and buy a ticket. What this does is it takes away that requirement. We still do need to know the name of the person who's traveling, which is why we require the advanced registration. We have a database of individuals who are participants, and it links to their credit card information. We also eventually, we're not there yet, but eventually do want to get to the place where you can tap with your phone. And I know for those who travel, there are other places like City of Chicago, City of New York recently started doing this. It's called open loop payments. And it is absolutely, without a doubt, the wave of the future. We are very much intending for this to be a core part of our service. The transit agencies in the Sacramento region, including in Yolo County, are also intending to participate in a similar program that's part of the wider California Integrated Travel Project. So I do think you're going to see a lot of changes in California, and the effect of it as a consumer is that you're no longer going to have to worry so much about which operator are you riding on, which ticket do you need to buy. You can tap from one place to another place to another place, and it makes it so simple. And I'll tell you, I was just fortunate enough to go to Rome very recently, a couple of weeks ago. My son was on spring break, and we took him out to Rome. And in Rome, they had this similar setup, and so we all just pulled out our credit cards, and this didn't require any translations, and we just tapped our credit cards against the turnstile and walked right through. It was a piece of cake. Makes it so easy.
You know, we only have about, 5 or 6 minutes left. I want to get to a couple other things. One, talk about the plans to electrify the route and speed up the trains. I mean, this could be a whole half hour all by itself, I realize, and it's sometime off in the distance. But maybe tell us what the vision is, what the goal is for the route longer term.
So I would say it's unlikely that we'll electrify. So you're correct in one important aspect, which is we are required to get to zero emissions. So there has been a requirement established by the California Air Resources Board for rail operators in the state of California. And there's a complicated setup, but over the next couple decades to get to zero emission. And what we think is going to happen in our corridor is that's going to happen with hydrogen powered trains. I was excited just a few weeks ago. I was out in Pueblo, Colorado. There's a national test facility for trains in Pueblo, Colorado. I was excited to go out there and ride the new Stadler train set that has been purchased for California. So the first sets are going to be operating in a small agency down in Southern California. And it was an incredible piece of machinery. It's a lighter weight vehicle, and it operates entirely on hydrogen. And so the goal is to create hydrogen in a manner that is sustainable. So to use renewable resources to generate hydrogen, there's a lot of energy required to generate hydrogen, and then use that hydrogen to power our fleet. And the reason I will say that electric is not as feasible in our corridor is because we operate on a freight-owned corridor that would require support of Union Pacific.
So that's a change then, right? Over the electrification was the idea at one point. So that's evolved, it sounds like.
I don't think that we should rule out anything at this point, but I will tell you that as the scales are tipping in one direction or another, that we are more likely to see hydrogen than we are to see electric on our corridor. However, there's just a lot of research and development going on in this area right now. California is really pushing a lot of that in the industry, as is Europe. There are technologies that operate on batteries and recharging. So you might have intermittent recharging along your corridor rather than a continuous electric support. So I think we're going to wait and see. But if you were a betting man, I would say good to bet on hydrogen as the long-term solution in our corridor.
Two last things I want to get to before we go. One is your business plan. You commented in there about how the corridor has recovered more slowly than other state-supported services nationwide, and you attributed some of that to marketing. So it sounds like you're going to be doing more to promote the service. Just real quickly, what's that going to take the form of, like deals with fairs or events or what have you?
So you're correct. Our service has recovered more slowly than some of the other services across the country. That's been true in the transit field, largely in California, because we have such a white-collar employment base, and so many of those jobs have been shifted to remote work. As I mentioned earlier, that seems to be coming back pretty quickly in our corridor. So I think long-term, the prospects are good. We are very aggressively pushing our communication strategy, which includes marketing with our customers. I'll mention one thing that's really exciting is we now, for example, have real-time information. So if you search on Google Maps to travel on our service, that is now a real-time feed of information that's very, very recent. It's also on the other apps that digest transit data from across the country. So we want people to know when our trains are coming. Sometimes they're late, but we want you to be able to know when that's happening. So we're working on pushing on information on when trains are arriving that's real-time so that our customers have confidence in the service. So that's a big element of our marketing push. But then we constantly partner. So we're partnering with concerts. I think we're all aware the A's are going to be playing in Sacramento. We're partnering with some of the other sports events that happen. We carried several thousand people to Taylor Swift's concert recently. We've got Luke Combs coming up here in the middle of May and then Rolling Stones in July. Those are really good ways to introduce people to our service who maybe never tried it before.
These are the concerts in Santa Clara. I wanted to ask again about the possibility of a night train. I know when we've talked about it before, there's not a lot of traffic that kind of night, but it's hard to do an event in the Bay Area. I think you have to leave your San Francisco connection at 7:30 or maybe 8:30 on the weekends. Is that going to change or is that just going to be that way for a while?
I think it's going to be that way for a while, although I will tell you that as we explore going back to full service, we are doing a comprehensive review of our schedule, and we've got lots of good feedback from customers on things that they want to see. I would encourage anybody who's listening to send us notes. So as I said online, there's a really easy way to submit comments to us because we are actively looking at our schedule, and that will be the kind of thing that we'll consider as we look forward.
All righty. Well, Rob, we're leaving a lot of subjects on the table, but you know, as I say, there's a lot going on in the corridor, and thank you very much for talking with us today about what's going on.
Really appreciate the opportunity, Bill.
I am Bill Buchanan, and this is Davisville on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California, kdrt.org/Davisville. And we've been talking with Rob Padgett, Managing Director of the Capital Corridor. Rob, thanks again for appearing on the show, and thanks everybody for listening today.
Hello, this is the KDIRT Events Outlook for Monday, April 29th. My name is Ned, and here's what's happening. Coming up this Thursday, May 2nd, at Delta of Venus in Davis, San Kazagas.